A playlist original.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
Coming soon.
So much
coming
soon
to video.
Coming soon to 4K Blu-ray. A playlist original. This is the Films at Home podcast, your source for everything home entertainment.
Hey everyone, Jeff here from Films at Home. Thanks for calling back to the Films at Home podcast today. I know I've been a little bit inconsistent with the episodes, but I am going to try to do these at least once a month, if not bi-weekly. Obviously, I have a lot of things going on with different content and the YouTube channel and everything I've got going on. But today, we've got a great guest. We've got Oscar back from Vinegar Syndrome, and Oscar is the archivist over at the Vinegar Syndrome facility, and he's got a lot to talk about because they just announced the Lost Picture Show, which is an incredible Blu-ray box set of 10 different lost films. Now, these films were lost forever. Different archives found these reels. Oscar helped with some of that, and they restored them, and they're putting out this incredible box set of movies that, like, literally nobody has seen in years, and I guarantee most of you have never heard of. So it's a really exciting, very cool project for physical media and film preservation. We'll dive into that. We'll talk about the crazy movies that are in this set. We'll discuss archival procedure into the future with digital movies and what's going on there. We'll talk film preservation, boutique labels, all that fun stuff that you guys enjoy. And of course, our love for movies and physical media shines through here, and Oscar's great as always. So here's the interview, and stick around for the end for the outro. All right, guys, so we're here today. We got Oscar back from Vinegar Syndrome. Oscar, thanks for joining. You guys have had some exciting news lately.
Yeah. I mean, it's been news that I haven't been able to speak about since coming here. So it's kind of like, I think everybody here who's been working on it has kind of been wanting to kind of like talk about the cool projects, but we can only talk about, you know, like loose, like talks about certain things. But yeah, this Lost Films box set has kind of like been an enormous undertaking. So I'm glad to finally get to, like, I don't know, discuss a tiny bit about it.
Yeah, no, I bet. I mean, it's 10 basically lost films, which is funny because we were talking, I asked you this question last time you were on about, hey, do you feel like you're like the, you know, Indiana Jones out there trying to find like these lost artifacts of film and then like restoring them? And, you know, I had no idea you guys were working on this at the time. Yeah. So it was very a timely question now leading into what you've got. So how does it happen? How do you find 10 lost films that nobody's seen in X amount of years? You know, where did that all come together and how long did it take?
I mean, I think, like, to bring it back to more of like a meta way of talking about it, I think the thing that we spoke about last time too was I came to this company to kind of like dig through materials because of the lost films of Herschel Gordon Lewis. It's like our first release that kind of like instilled that whether it's good or bad, we're going to try to find some unique way of framing it and cool way of talking about it. So that kind of like initially drew me, and the Vinegar Syndrome film preservation side of it too. But this initial thing happened when it came to all of our attention that it was going to be 10 years. So basically the idea was like to put together some of the things which we've found that are lost, but, you know, these are lost films, so these names haven't been circulating. You don't know whether or not they're good, whether or not they're bad.
Right.
But they're lost films. So how do you, like, I don't know, let people know that they're cool? So then, you know, it's the long story short is even before me, over the course of 10 years, that's been the focus. And
right,
people think that we just found 10 films. We found way more than that. And the coolest thing about it is it's a curated package. We're giving you like the actual coolest ones that we've found that we can actually put out now. So that's kind of why I'm the most excited about it. There are certain ones which I've found and I would bring to everybody here, and they're like, yeah, you know, it's lost, but is it cool, interesting, and fun?
Right.
And when we'd actually watched it, nah, but hopefully we can put that out in the future. But I don't know. It's going to be very cool seeing people's reactions, because some of them have shifted my actual favorite films list, where like, not just because of my involvement, but some of them I quote on a daily basis because they're so fucking iconic.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's a long time coming. And there's a lot more to come, as we said last time too. I feel like such a broken record, but it's been a long time since I've been here. They've been asking me, "Have I found anything today? Have I found anything today?" And finally, we get to kind of show everybody.
Yeah. No, this is when I saw this come out, I thought, like, this is what a great set. I love that it's a curated set. They're all in one box. I mean, I'm looking at the pre-order price right now too, $80. You guys are being very generous with the pricing of it as well. I mean, that's a great price for 10 films that nobody's really ever seen. With all the artwork, you've got the additional documentary in there too, which I think is really cool, that kind of talks to exactly what you guys do. And I've talked about this too, like, these boutique genre physical media labels, like, this is who's doing that work right now. Like, this is who's preserving films and restoring films and like making sure the next generation has access to this stuff. So it's a super cool package all in one.
For sure. I'm very excited for Elijah's doc. It's going to be very cool. Like, he got pretty much like unfettered access to the behind the scenes running of our little archive and our operations. So I'm very excited to actually see how he deals with other companies too, and how the whole sphere kind of revolves. Cause it's, you know, there's other people in this world too, besides Vinegar Syndrome, and people who help and people who are benevolent forces, other archives. So I hope, like, beyond just the films, that this will be like a box set, which will also explain a little bit more about lost films and the hunt, and why that it's important to keep hunting for them anyway, you know?
Yeah. No, and you're right. There's a lot of, I don't know if you've worked with George Eastman and that whole project. I actually just watched last night The Legend of Boggy Creek, which was kind of, I guess that was lost for a while. There wasn't a film print till a couple years ago that they discovered. So they did that restoration, Invader from Mars, 1953, that they restored. There's a lot of cool people doing like amazing stuff out there. And it's really cool that like physical media is kind of driving it. Like, that's why these were done, was like, well, we can sell a Blu-ray, sell a 4K release. Like, there's actually a little bit of business behind it, which always helps too, helps drive that. I love what you guys did. I can't wait to get my hands on one, but I do have to ask, like, tell me a little bit, I don't know if you want to pick a couple of your favorites. Like, can you tell us anything about what's in this set? Because like you said, me, many other people, I don't know if many people outside of the people who worked on this set or maybe worked on the movies themselves know what's coming out here. So you want to grab a couple of favorites and give us a little sneak peek preview?
Yeah, for sure. I think the certain ones, again, all of the vast majority of them are stored here. So I can start with my favorite, which unfortunately, but also fortunately, it was found elsewhere by a great archivist named Sean at the Academy. And basically that film is called Wild Blue Apes of the Cannibal Isle, also known as Doctor or Captain Quack Quack. And that is my favorite. This is the one that I talk about on a daily basis. It is one of the most wildest, like, most ingenious films you'll ever see. And it's the only G-rated film on the box set.
Oh, so this is the kiddie one, then the box set. Okay.
So you know it has to be good if we're putting out, like, a kids movie, you know?
Right.
So, like, I don't know. I once was, like, we were once looking at a collection. We came across a bunch of water damage stuff, which is congealed together. And one of the owners basically quoted it. He said, now I can say it, finally, the story. He said, "Hard as a rock." And he sang it, "Hard as a rock." And this is a line from the movie. And I said, "You know that you just made that reference to one of the only people in the world who would ever know what you're talking about." So I'm incredibly excited for that one. Great songs, amazing, super catchy. The Larry Crane film, Beware of Black Widow, really cool. particularly from a preservation perspective, because the story behind it was very, like, we didn't know whether or not, like, it was complete at the beginning. It was found up here, and when I came across that title, I was just very excited. But the OCN seemed like it wasn't complete and was in a collection that was super water damaged. And luckily, I opened up one of the cans, and besides a little bit of rust on the edges, I was, like, ecstatic to find out that that actually exists and is in good condition. So that's going to look beautiful. Red Midnight was also found. That was the last one of the set to be found. It's like a radio action movie found by Stephen Morawitz, who runs DistroPix, which is, like, now part of our collection as well, too. And he's a great coworker. But we were all super excited because it contains, like, this radioactive, like, subplot from 1967. And it was directed by, I may get this wrong, an ophthalmologist or maybe an optimist. Maybe an optimist for a first-time movie. But, like, it's a very cool movie. And it feels like something that, like, a strange movie that something weird would have put out. But it's going to look beautiful, like, really stellar. And... sorry. And What's Love? All of them have, like, a special place in my heart at this point.
I bet.
What's Love is, like, one of the wildest things. That's another one we have the 16 original for. And basically, you'll never find another movie where, like, it's all sick-ass 80s songs. And then there's a scene where Jesus is having sex with the world. Like... it's amazing. It's really cool. So I don't know. Now that I'm, like, running through them out loud, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm glad that the one that I wanted didn't get the push ahead. But yeah, so there's some really cool ones. And Last of the American Hobos, great surrealist pseudo doc as well. But very strange backstory behind that one too. But yeah, the original for that one, that's the true Vinegar Syndrome one. Because the actual original elements are vinegared, and we had to actually pull from a print. So that one also needs mention, because it's very wild too. Very strange, and great soundtrack as well. It's like Vanishing of the American Hobo, if you know, like, the Kerouac article. Like, it's like a direct response to that.
Okay.
It's very cool. Sorry to get nerdy.
No. That's cool. Yeah. No, I mean, hey, I can feel the passion. I mean, obviously, how long have you guys been working on this set? Like, literally, you know, it's been 10 years, but how long, like, when did this all come together?
Yeah. I mean, to be perfectly honest, like, you know, we spoke about it a bit last time where it's like, there are a lot of things that we want to release and automatically we push them ahead. If we find the OCN or, like, a really good element, or the best element, I should say, that's existing. But there are a lot of ones that kind of fall through the cracks because they, like, you know, they showed at a theater once or twice or were shown to distributors and then just shut down because people weren't that excited about releasing it. But, you know, I think this has been, like, from the very beginning, like, they showed me this vast collection of piles of film, and they said, well, we're hoping to do something with, like, lost films, hopefully the ones that we've found over the years. And now when it's finally coming out, like, obviously, like, it's good to see some of all of our work. Like, some of these films have come from Europe, some of these films have come from, like, for instance, credit to the Murnau Stiftung, but, like, other archives did an enormous amount of work in finding these films. So the most important part of this, I think, is, like, a lot of really, really great archivists and film preservationists around the world have really worked on making this set possible. So it's like everyone has been, like, working on it here and thinking about it as a possibility, but it only became, like, a real, like, actual tangible, maybe, like, 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, when it was like, maybe this could be the format. And then when I heard about the format, I was just like, because I don't set the formats. I just look at the films. I was just like, this is going to be really cool. You know, as an archivist, I was going to be, like, pumped about it. But it was only until I actually saw the films where I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be really cool. is not just from an archival perspective or a preservation perspective. Like, some of these movies are good enough to actually reshift people's opinions on certain time periods, which is what we're all trying to do, you know?
Yeah.
At least I am.
Well, that's a good transition, because I actually want to ask you about the current time period. I mean, what do you think future stuff? I think you mentioned films that, like, oh, they got shown to distributors and then that was it and they never got a release, but that, you know, they at least have elements and they can be found. And I think of stuff like all these movies recently that have just been like made and canceled. And it's like, we're just not going to put it out. Like, stuff that goes onto a streaming service and then it's gone and like a license runs out or whatever. So, okay.
The Catwoman wasn't Catwoman or
Batgirl was Batgirl, just like, right. Yeah, like completely finished, canceled. And I think Warner did that to a couple other movies too, or streaming shows and I see that probably being a more common, I mean, they just look at them like tax write-offs, which kind of sucks. But I just think about what does 50 years from now, like, what does that landscape look like? Because this stuff, you know, maybe it exists on hard drives and things, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's on a cloud server that gets shut down and then is gone. I mean, what kind of conversations is like your community and the archivist world kind of having about that? Because I think about that a lot of just like, at least you can find physical elements of this stuff from 50, 60 years ago. But into the future, are we even going to have physical elements to find? Like, they may not be there.
Dude, I'm very glad we did this, because that is like literally one of those things that like I think about all the fucking time, where it's like,
yeah,
you know, like a lot of these movies are like, we do have those film elements. We can find film elements, and if it was released on film, there's a good chance that it is, like, as you said last time, in like grandmother's attic or basement or something like that. But yeah, like hard drives are like not a long-term thing. Cloud's really tricky. I mean, if we're depending on a cable that's running under the ocean, you know, like,
right.
It's a horrifying thing and a very proprietary situation, because tying it back in with like that situation with the I'm blanking on the name of the movie that was shelved, that you just mentioned.
The Batgirl,
where it's like, in the end, a lot of every single thing in media is like truly a business, you know. It's like,
yeah,
it's like all of these things are meant to actually propel the actual company a little bit forward, no matter how you think about it. And yeah, it's tricky. It's super tricky, because I'm hoping that there's some kind of like weird way of maybe they'll come out with a Lost Films box set in 10 years where they'll be like the Batgirl.
Right.
So it'll be this one. I mean, Lost Films keeps happening, and it's never going to really stop. We're going to keep finding things and keep finding new ways of losing things. And then eventually, as archivists and people who work in media who want to find this kind of stuff, like, it'll also like actually relate back to people who are caring about this, who are like not professionals, you know. The not professionals are the people who keep this actual material alive half the time, you know? So yeah, it'll be internet archivists. It'll be people who are like actually combing through pages and actually finding posters. Like, a lot of the materials that we found for these films, Red Midnight, good luck finding anything about that. You're not going to find anything. It was released by a crazy guy. Love, you know, everyone's a little bit crazy if you're going to make a movie.
We're all a little crazy.
Yeah, exactly. But like, this guy was just like, and he actually made a movie. Cool movie for the first time, like has action in it, has like ties in with the actual Cold War fears of the time in 1967, and then like shot it in color. Like, how in the world did you do that, you know?
Yeah.
But we're gonna keep, I don't know, needing to expand what an archivist means or what a preservationist is, because it can't just be the people who are like, I don't know, trained in this. You know, I'm trained in this, but I learned everything, you know, like doing it myself. as I'm sure like everybody who's a professional in any industry does. You know, you got to teach yourself how to do this. So, dude, that's such a good point. Yeah, it's just going to keep happening. Yeah.
I mean, I think about it even with my own. I'm like, at some point in time, some of these newer movies that, you know, studios have put out, the major studios, and who knows, they go through merger and switch systems and things get moved around. And I'm like, how long is it going to be before they're going to be going back and being like, does somebody have like a Blu-ray release of that we can pull the audio off of? Cause we lost the track, or, you know what I mean? Like, the stuff's all just floating around out there. And the only physical versions of a lot of this stuff right now, I mean, hard drives, technically, yeah, it's physical, but like you said, not really an archivist dream, I'm sure, to have everything on a disc. If everything in the 80s had been stored on floppy disk, we'd probably be having an issue right now. So yeah, I think about that. I'm like, I wonder, they're going to go back to people who have these movies and go, do you have that feature, you know, that interviewer from 1995? Cause it's not on YouTube. We only put it on the disc, and we pulled all the YouTube ones down cause of copyright, and now we don't have it. It's like, it only exists on that Blu-ray release from 2012. Can somebody help us? And I see that happening. Like, that, I think that will literally happen within the next decade or two.
Totally. Can I flip it around on you and basically say, are you taking care of your stuff? Are you backing up everything?
Oh yeah. Right? Well, that's the thing. I don't have them all backed up digitally, but I store them all correctly. I make sure that they're not stored improperly, so that, you know, I want to make sure this stuff lasts 30, 40, 50, 60 years. I want it to outlast me, hopefully. And I figure, hey, if I can still buy a VHS tape off of eBay from 1980 and play it 45 years later, you know, I've got to be doing a better job than what people did with those back in the 80s. So, but yeah, I mean, I keep it all. I've talked about it in videos. Like, don't put your discs up in like your attic, and it's going to be 120 degrees in the summer and negative 10 in the winter. I mean, you're going to ruin them. They're going to be no good. Like, you have to kind of preserve your own collection, or you'll lose that too. Even just, I mean, that's the most basic form of like preservation, but you have to as a collector. I've had people get ruined discs. They've had discs that they've lost, or they put in storage containers when they went to move. And like, I've moved houses 3 times in my collection, and I don't let them out of my sight until I'm leaving the house. Like, they go in the pod, and then they show up in the next day at my house, and I take them out. Like, I'm not putting them in storage for a month, because I don't trust it. I think it'll just, it could ruin them, and it doesn't take much.
No. I mean, again, like, as you said, like, these are mass-produced things, too. Like, just like film is, like, a emulsion on, like, an actual piece of film, like, Blu-rays are, like, multiple reflective layers, like, on top of each other. Like, and to mass produce them, they use like different types of adhesive. Like, this is, now you've got me on a fucking train where like, but like, you know, all of these materials, whatever form of media it is, like, it's all chemistry. Obviously, it's math and science, but it's all chemistry too. The moment adhesives come into it too, like any type of thing which is molding something to another, and it deals with reflective surfaces, you could have a little bit of change over time. Like, if the physical actually affects the actual film itself, it's tricky.
Yeah.
But that's why it's important to like have like access to this, or give access, and why it's really cool to work for like a place that does this. Not to blow too much smoke to my employers or whatever.
No, but I mean, they're doing great work, and just, you know, outside of this set, all the stuff that's been coming out lately has been insane. I haven't even been able to keep up. I mean, and I remember what you guys were 10 years ago, because I bought a couple of those early ones, and it was like, there weren't nearly as many coming out each month. The output now is amazing, and it's incredible, and there's something for everybody. So, I mean, if you don't want to blow the smoke, I will, because it's quickly become, just in the last few years, it's gone from kind of like Vinegar Syndrome in my head, like 2017, 2018, it was like obscure, you know, like a lot of like the, a lot of B movies, a lot of the more like erotic stuff was really where it was. It was a very niche thing. and you guys now have like literally something for everyone. Like there is a label, whether it's Vinegar Syndrome, one of the partner labels with OCN, or like there is something for every kind of genre fan out there, which is incredible. Cause like, oh, you don't like slashers, but you like psychological thrillers, or you like, you know, foreign Italian horror. Like you've got it all. Like you like the erotica stuff, go for it. It's there. Like it's so crazy how much there is.
Totally. Yeah, definite shout out to the like partner labels and Justin's work there too.
Oh yeah.
It's a nuts thing. And like, you know, I think I like to think of it like, and I can't speak for any of them because it's just so many different like great curators over there, but it's like, I don't know. I feel like the reason why they kind of come onto this umbrella too is because we all kind of have that like shared feeling of like wanting to introduce people to stuff. There's no better feeling than actually like having something in your hand and saying, this is good. Like it's weird, but it's good.
Yeah. You know? Right.
So even if it's a doc from like China, or if it's like an actual, I don't know, something from the Czech Republic, you know, there's always something really cool. I should say Czechoslovakia, not Czech Republic. It was Czechoslovakia back then. But yeah, they're also doing really great work. But yeah, for sure. It's all just about like providing new perspectives and weird shit. Like yeah. I love the slashers. I love the adult stuff too. Like it's just fascinating to like learn about that culture. And sure. Like, I don't know, the business side of it too. You can learn so much about business, about how these companies were running, like small grindhouse, like distribution and production companies.
Oh yeah.
So, I don't know, just fascinating stuff. So,
I mean, a lot of times those companies and the adult stuff like that drives, they're usually the first ones in, and then everybody else kind of catches, like, from what I hear, the story is like, that's why Blu-ray made it instead of HD DVD. It was like, one got adopted by the adult industry and one didn't. It's like they really do drive this stuff. People don't realize there are smaller drivers out there who are adopting the tech early and pushing the limits. And a lot of those grindhouse films too. I mean, there's stuff you don't get today without that. That there's movies today that don't exist without that movement. And so, yeah, I one of my favorite things too is showing people like the weird thing. Like,
yeah,
I watched with my wife the other night Blades, just because I'm a huge Jaws fan, and she walked in and she's like, "What the hell are you watching?" And I was like, "I'm watching." I was like, "It's Jaws, but with a lawnmower on a golf course." It's like, it's unreal. And she sat down and was like into it. You know, like we watched it, and I would have never like put that on her watch list. But it is funny how you get drawn into this stuff and you're almost like, I can't believe this exists, but I'm glad it does, because this is just wild. This is insane.
Yeah. You know, that one is like a weird like add on to that. The archivist at Yale Film Archive, Brian Mitchin, he came to me the other day, or like maybe it was a little while ago. Time is relative. But like, he came to me and he was like, you know the trauma movie with the lawnmower? And I was like, yeah, Blades? And he's like, yeah, it's all mine. And then I was like, yeah. And he's like, I'm going to do a screening of it. And I think maybe, I don't know if I am allowed to say this, but I feel like one of the main stars of that movie ended up becoming a very important person at Yale. So like, again, like a movie like that, which you wouldn't like expect it to necessarily be good because it's a Jaws ripoff. If you watch the movie, the way it zags, it's not about how it zigs. It's about how it like goes. Where is it going? It just took some weird turns here.
Yeah,
like some of the death sequences are very cool in that one too. Huh? Yeah.
Yeah, but that, I mean, it's true. All that stuff. I mean, think about how many people came out of that trauma machine, like that went on to become huge Hollywood filmmakers or actors. And I mean, that stuff does drive your next generation. You know, whatever's going on in that kind of indie, low budget kind of world, whatever you want to call it, you know, people just doing their thing and just making whatever the hell they want to make is what drives that creativity for like, that's where you get. And like, I think Edgar Wright was like a trauma guy, right? Or James Gunn was, maybe. Yeah. James Gunn definitely was. I don't know if Edgar Wright was, too. But, like, these guys come out of that stuff, and now they're making the biggest movies on the planet. So it is also important, you know, definitely not to be overlooked. I know some people – I get some people who look down on it. They're like, oh, I'm not a horror fan. I'm not into, like, that stuff. It's too weird. And I'm like, eh, just – I'd give it a shot because I think you're going to find kind of redeeming qualities in all of it. And – those movies oftentimes make me think, they make me think a little bit more, and then they kind of inspire. I watch something like that and I'm like, damn, I could make something like this, right?
Yeah.
I should go out and do something like that. Like, I could write something like this. It kind of, you don't get that feeling when you watch, you know, I love a good big blockbuster, but I don't watch Barbie and go, oh, I can make that. Like, right. That inspires me. No, it's entertaining, but it's too big for me. So I think if you're starting out, especially like as a young filmmaker, this is the place to start, because you're going to get that inspiration at a level that you can actually like comprehend, like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah. This is such a, I think there is something totally to the fact that it's like also just releasing them in good quality, not just like,
yeah,
like obviously there can be some really good, like, if a film was mastered correctly in the 80s onto like tape or something, like maybe there's a good version, possibly, like it's very unlikely, but like possibly, but if you get to see from the actual film elements, these natural grains too, that actual grain structure, you can see exactly how a prop was made and how an actual like effect was done. Like, I think that's kind of like what inspires kind of anybody to think, oh, this is not just like, there's not just like a curtain. There's an actual like system in place and multiple people, like, I don't know, contributing one aspect to this actual whole. So I really like what you said, because I think like exploitation cinema is kind of like, for me, every art house filmmaker like was intersecting with this world, you know?
Yeah.
Like famously, like 3 a.m., Orson Welles. I mean, come on. You know, there are great people like coming in and out and saying, you know, maybe I'll make something like this. It's,
yeah,
you know, just for fun, you know, because if you can cut your teeth on something which you're not taking totally serious, then I don't know. It kind of just awakens creativity, I guess.
Right. But, yeah, definitely. That's what I feel. It's that creative drive is like, and you have the freedom to kind of, when you don't take it too seriously and you don't have, you know, a finance team on top of you being like, you've got $5 million. You got to make, like, when you're just out and doing it and you have that freedom. Yeah. I mean, I think that's where you find the great, you know, the next great filmmakers. Like, I don't think it's a mistake that even like James Wan makes a Saw movie and then becomes one of the biggest, you know, horror, and then gets into Aquaman. It's like, that's where he started too. Like, this is where people get their start. It's like, you just have a cool idea and you're like, let's go do it.
Yeah. In the end, it's about fun, right? Like, movies should all kind of like be about fun. If you're not like watching something and like enjoying it, like, I'll have fun watching an art house thing, as I'm sure you will too, where I'm just like, that is really great ideas. And like alternatively, it'll be like, something which is exploitation, where I'll have to pluck things out a little bit more in terms of cool ideas. But when those cool ideas are there and they're doing it on a shoestring, I'm like, oh, that took someone actually fighting for that idea. That's very cool.
Right.
And I think tying it back to the Lost Films, it's like every single one of these is like cool facets about them and cool times in history, and they come from cool like stories, like cool places all around the world. Like, and like, there literally is something in like each of these Lost Films for every single type of film viewer. Like, if you like the art house, try the Titus Moody, you know, if you like weird fucking like art house porny stuff, but not really, go for What's Love, you know, deep, like deep inside too, the Joe Sarno movie is just like, if you want to be depressed about watching a sexploitation movie, but have really, really great performances, I think it's the best acted out of the entire set. Like, watch that one. There's literally something for everybody, I hope. And I don't know. It's nice to kind of be part of like a small part of like the actual process of kind of bringing them to people and also telling the stories and how they were rediscovered too.
No, absolutely. So I'm very excited. I can't wait to get my hands on it. And
can I ask a question?
Yeah, I want
to turn it around again. Do you have one that you like kind of like read a little bit about or saw something from that you're like,
I'm going to forget the name of it, but that G-rated one, I was drawn to, but also it's the Las Vegas Strangler, because I'm a big slasher guy. So reading about that feels like I've never heard of it. Feels like something cool that would be right up my alley. So probably those two for me to start, but I mean, I'm going to dive right in.
Dude. Yeah. Las Vegas Strangler is also a cool one. Yeah. No tears for the damned. Like, I think that one's going to be super cool because it's like a very unexpected slasher. There's a lot of deaths. I think if I can like pivot too, you're going to love Violated. Violated has like a lot of really cool like death sequences, and I may be getting the title wrong, so apologies, but I believe it's Violated. Every single kill has a different mask. So you have these kind of themed masks around each kill, which are all different. And you're like, did nobody do this before this? I think this may be the first time this is done, and no one picked up on that as an idea.
Yeah. No, I can't think of another movie where they'd swap. So same killer, but different mask for every kill.
I mean, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I'll watch. But no, I can't think of a movie that would, I mean, that's usually pretty much the mask is usually the get up for the whole movie. That's kind of, and the masks are always so iconic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody's done that. Well, I guess they have, but nobody did it again. I can't think of one.
Yeah.
That'll be cool then. Definitely looking forward to that one. I didn't know that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, you're going to like that one. I think you're going to like that one. I hope. And it has a great performance, like a very, very good leading actress performance.
Well, I can't wait. I appreciate everything you guys are doing because I consistently find new things that I literally just blind buy from you all. And like the Devonsville Terror is one that I keep recommending to people now, because I'm like, I love Donald Pleasance and I love Halloween and I love like that vibe, that weird 70s, 80s horror movie. And I just had never seen it. Total blind spot. I never heard of it. Somebody else recommended it to me. I bought it. Now I recommend it to other people. And it's like, I keep finding cool stuff and most of the time I'm literally just buying off of a description and some cover art. Cause I don't know. I've never seen most of this stuff and I don't even want to watch the trailer most of the time. I want to go in and just be like, I want to be shocked, surprised, like maybe disgusted. Who knows what's going to happen, but I want that feeling. So I love it. Appreciate what you guys are doing. And this Lost Picture show is going to be just awesome. I can't wait to get my hands on it.
Yeah, thank you again for having me on, Jeff. It's been super cool. And it's nice to tie it back to the last time we talked too.
Yeah.
Because like, definitely. It kind of feels like a full circle moment where I'm kind of like, see, we did find some cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I was on the right track.
Discoveries. Yeah, you were on literally the exact right track. And at a certain point, my eyes, like, I was just like, okay, don't show your tell, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But definitely in this situation, I think you and like different people who are actually interested in kind of this era of filmmaking are going to make cool discoveries. That's the one weird part about it, where it is a blind buy. It feels like a blind buy because it is a blind buy. These are lost films. Like discover along with us. Cause when we saw some of this shit, we were like, oh, this is fucking cool. People are going to really want to see this.
Yeah, no, I can't wait to watch it, show it to other people, just have their minds blown by what's out there that you've never seen before. I'm ready to have my mind blown. So it's shipping end of November, right? It's up for pre-orders now, but it ships after the big Black Friday sale in November.
Yeah.
So
it's coming out super soon. Yeah.
Sounds like a great Christmas present for the movie collectors out there.
Honestly, I'm excited to give this out to people too. Cause I don't know, to be perfectly honest, it's difficult to like not say things about lost films if you found them, but it's hard as a rock to, no, I couldn't actually think of a joke in time. but now you guys will get it after this movie is out. It's one of the most mind-blowing things of all time. But yeah, thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming back on, and thanks for the continued support. And I appreciate you reaching out the minute this was like even announced. You were like, hey, let's talk about it, because I had asked the question. So that was super cool for you to give me the chance and let people know what this thing's all about, because I'm sure a lot of people have questions. You know, we see this and nobody knows what those 10 movies are. So this will give you hopefully a little insight into what you can expect. And we talked a little bit about the movies. And so, yeah, it was, was super cool. And now I'm even more excited for it than I was before.
That's good. That's good. This is good. I mean, I'm not a salesman. I'm just a nerdy archivist. So I'm like glad that some of my enthusiasm can actually show.
100%. And I'm excited. I know plenty of people on the channel. This will be a little niche, but I know I got a good group on the channel who will really appreciate this stuff. So I'm sure it'll do really well. I hope it's a big hit for you guys so that you can do more of them, because it's a super cool concept. So. Sick. Love it.
Thank you, man.
All right, guys, that was the interview with Oscar. Thank you for watching if you're on YouTube. Thank you for listening if you're on Spotify, Apple, whatever your favorite podcast platform is. I appreciate all the support. As always, if you want more episodes like this, make sure you're subscribed here on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed on Spotify, Apple. Make sure you're following me on social media. All those links will be in the video description, in the audio description. And if you're watching, you can scan the QR code right here with your phone, and that'll bring you to all of those links as well. So thank you, guys. Thank you to Oscar. If you want to check out this box set, I will put the pre-order link down in the description. $80 for this set right now is a steal. That is $8 a movie, not even including the documentary and the feature books that are with it. So go check that out. Support Vinegar Syndrome. And if you want to sign up for the rewards program, that link will be in the description as well. So click that, check it out, and you'll get a little bit of a bonus as a first-time buyer. But thank you all for watching or listening. Appreciate the support. Welcome back to the Films at Home podcast. This is going to be coming more frequently, so enjoy it. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, stay healthy out there, and I'll talk to you all soon.
Coming soon. Be sure to subscribe to the Films at Home podcast using your favorite app so you don't miss another episode. And while you're there, don't forget to rate and review this podcast, which helps us out tremendously. You can also help support us by watching our short form content over on YouTube and TikTok by searching Films at Home. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @films_at_home. The intro and outro were created by Elon Osborne. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.